Okay, welcome back to episode 187, if I have that right.
Yes, 187, Tim.
187. Momentous event this week. Joe Biden was sworn in as an eighth nation's 46th president of the United States. I understand it was an intimate affair. Few friends and family showed up, along with some 25,000 National Guard to provide security. Looking at it, the visuals look like kind of a coronation of a like a North Korean dictator or something.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it really reminded everyone of. It was kind of I mean, they had the North Koreans set up the decorations and things because they know how to do that kind of coronation of a dictator.
Apparently, they disassembled what was what. Was the wall on the Mexican-US border and put up around the Capitol. So
Well, they
barf.
did stop work on the wall, I can guarantee you that.
Yes, and so Nancy Pelosi likes walls now. So there's that. I got the idea that maybe what they should have done is did what the Major League Baseball and the NFL did when they couldn't have people in the stands, just sell people, cardboard avatars of themselves. You can buy one.
Yeah,
Help it.
you didn't see my avatar next to
Oh, yours wasn't.
Biden? Well, they've offered me one of the cabinet positions.
Oh, great. What would that be?
Well, I'm going to be I guess they want me to be the Secretary of Health, but I have to complete my transgender completion so that I can become qualified. But
Oh, that's
I'm going
right.
to be running.
Rachel Levine, former Richard Levine, was appointed the assistant Secretary of Health. This is so this is very historic, from what I understand. He's very qualified because he thinks he's a she. So I don't know if she'll be a, he will be in charge of mental health, but I guess that's an important message. Apparently, pretending you're a woman and transitioning and mutilating yourself and taking all the toxic hormone treatments is healthy. So. Good advice. And he did such a bang up job in Pennsylvania with the with COVID that he had to be promoted.
You know, I wonder about that. I mean, you wonder if Levine is an actual transsexual or if she just puts on the blonde wig.
I think
Because her skin does, I mean, I've seen like here in Santa Barbara, we actually have, transits and transgenders, and they have hormone therapy there where their skin becomes very feminine, soft.
He doesn't. He just looks like he just puts a wig on or something, and
Yeah, I mean, it just so I'm just you wonder about that. I mean,
he
I don't
doesn't seem
know.
into
Obviously,
it.
I'm just speculating, but I do think that it's in the realm of possibility because all obviously this is, just a kind of mind control that's being developed, So when you see someone like Levine, obviously it's just axiomatic that this is a propaganda device. It's not, some sort of legitimate cultural phenomena.
Yeah, it's the same reason why they put this crap in movies and promote all
Yeah,
degeneracy in
yeah, yeah.
movies. It's not because it makes money, it's because it transforms the culture, and that's all part of the control mechanism here. But so anyway, we had Joe Biden's inaugural his address. I saw bits and I didn't watch it like most Americans, the vast majority of Americans, the lowest ratings ever, from what I understand. But I guess was filled with the same old platitudes. A lot of contradictions, calling for unity, and then accusing everyone who opposes of being a racist or something, or white supremacy, and white terrorism, apparently. A lot of gaslighting in the speech, nevertheless. But the of course the what is clear that Biden and the Democrats, who control things in Washington now, and of course the media, are working to portray the political opposition, I guess the Trumpist, as white supremacist and traitors and insurrectionists and terrorists instead of tourists. And of course, the few people who watch CNN or MSNBC have been treated to a line of former CIA officials, FBI officials, and military brass, comparing, I guess, American populists and nationalists to Al Qaeda and ISIS. There was John Brennan. I saw him on CNN. I saw James Comey. I think he was on MSNBC or CNN. Who else did I see? Former. Oh yeah, McCabe, the FBI. Yeah, McCabe. All these people committed crimes, and none of them were indicted or charged by Donald Trump. But nevertheless, now they're feted and treated by the media as darlings to comment about how their fellow Americans should be put in gulags for their political opinions. Of course, on the first day, Biden signed, I think, 17 executive orders. One was a federal mask mandate, which requires anyone on federal property, including buildings and highways, to wear a mask at all times. But on highways? I mean, what is it? People driving like on highway or something?
It wasn't clear to me.
What does that mean? Driving in your car or getting in like a rest stop or something? I don't know. In addition to wearing a mask, flying on a plane from another anyone flying from another country would have to take a test. The reliable, much heralded reliable PCR test before they depart, and they will be they don't they'll
Well,
be
when they come
quarantined.
back, this was really new and very evil. So now you have to test when you get back and be quarantined regardless. So it just makes travel really
Yes.
onerous. I mean, the idea of a mandated, I think it's 8 days. I could be wrong about that, but it was 8 day quarantine. It just makes traveling and this is how they lock us in, is
Yeah.
with it, make it so unpleasant to do anything that we just stay home and isolate.
Now it's presumed, America, unless, you pose some sort of security risk. Now it's presumed they can just, keep everyone from entering or leaving, all because of a supposed health crisis, public health crisis. I'm sorry, Biden issued a 100-day mask challenge. Wow. Can you do it, Joe? Do it for your country? Wear a mask for 100 days?
No.
Is it the dumbest thing you think that a mask can prevent these the spread of microbes, bacteria, and viruses? I mean, it's the dumbest thing. Now, even assuming the mask provided some marginal benefit, even assuming that was the case, just the reality of it that you're asking hundreds of millions of Americans to wear masks all day everywhere you go. Obviously, they're not going to wear it properly. They're going to touch it. They're going to reuse it. So, at the end of the day, you're going to end up spreading more disease because of the A, people aren't breathing properly, and B, these things themselves become magnets for all types of bacteria because,
Well, they're what's called, as a word you first used, which I was very impressed with your vocabulary. They're fomites. They are they become themselves something that infects people. I have spent God amounts of time studying this mask issue so that I can speak in public places. Sometimes I scream at people in the parks from a soapbox. But here's the bottom line about non-respirator type masks. They have videos showing that, well, look, if you have the mask on and you sneeze, look, you're protecting everyone because only one-tenth the amount of virus gets out into the atmosphere. But the virus does not disappear. The virus is now just sitting there on your mask. The mask is building the viral load up, and if you wear it for like 20 minutes, suddenly your breath, which before would have had very slight amount of virus, now it's going to just be blowing viruses out right
Yes,
in everyone's face. So this is why you have all of these studies in which mask wearing doesn't reduce the spread of viral infections.
the sneeze itself is a healthy function. It's your body
Yeah, of
expelling.
course.
Yeah, it has to. I mean, and people
Now,
know to sneeze to cover themselves or pull out a Kleenex or something and direct it down. And so it's not like people just sneezing people's faces all day.
yeah, here's a little data point of kind of amusing. Now, a lot of the masks that are worn here in my area are surgical masks,
Yes.
right? Now, as you know, there's particular reasons for these things. They're not to prevent the spread of disease. They're to keep the doctor from drooling into an open wound,
Yeah.
typically. But here's the thing that I always find amusing is that If you have to sneeze and you're during a surgery, do you know what your training is with the mask? You're to put the mask directly into the patient because the sneeze will blow out the sides more than it goes straight out.
Yes.
So the idea that the mask has some sort of, ultimate reductive properties in terms of viral load is just, I mean, it's just preposterous. It's the whole COVID thing. I mean, how many times have we gone through
Well,
it?
it's this nurturing, this obsessive compulsive fear of germs. It's just completely unscientific. I mean, it's just irrational. It's impractical. It's again, part of this thing is that the is to somehow you can hide away from life in in the attempt to preserve life. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I think Biden is really going to use the COVID fear as the basis for a medical dictatorship. He'll be creeping toward that every single day of his administration, and they'll be, trying to frighten people on one side and then use the intimidation of the fearful against the ones who are clear-minded to see if they can just keep beating them down until everyone is wearing a mask all the time.
He also called for state and county leaders to implement mandatory mask laws and social distancing mandates for non-federal spaces. So that nonsense continues. There was also an order calling for an advance of racial equity through federal government. Oh, that's a new one. Haven't they been doing that for, what, 60 years?
Well, I know we could call it something like, well, how about affirmative action?
About just hating Whitey?
That would be a more descriptive of the truth. In his speech, he talked about that there was this cry for racial justice that had been 400 years in the making, moves us, and he says that it can't be any more desperate or any more clear. And now there's a rise of political extremism, white supremacy, domestic terrorism that we must confront and we will defeat. This was just before he talked about how he was going to heal the divided nation. But
So he insults some
so white
75 million
supremacy
Americans.
is like the new COVID. It morphs, it can't really be defined particularly. It's just an all-purpose battering ram against people of European backgrounds. But hopefully, there is still the capacity to demand a definition of it, and to demand that there is an explanation of what, people mean when they use that expression. Because, I was, when I heard the thing, I thought, well, gee, just historically, there hasn't really been that kind of white supremacy that you're referring to, at least for Europeans. I mean, think of the German people, the women who were raped at the end of World War II. I mean, think of Gettysburg, the Irish immigrants that were forced into the slaughterhouse, World War I. So there has been supremacy, and some of these people who are engaged in it can be called white,
Yes.
but it's actually not a particularly a phenomenon that goes out across all of the ethnicities. It's really there's just two groups that really are can actually be called legitimately supremacists, and those are the Jews and the secret societies like Freemasons. I mean, think of all of the presidents that have either, Masonic or Demolay or Skull and Bones. I mean, the secret societies are definitely a supremacist. And then, I was kind of amazed when I got the list of Biden's appointments, for the cabinet. I mean, Anthony Blinken, Secretary of State, David Cohn, Director of CIA, Garland, Attorney General, Director of National Intelligence, Avril Haines, Chief of Staff, Ronald Klain, Rachel Levine, I mean, I call him, her, whatever, the Farrah Fawcett lookalike. And then it goes on. I mean, Janet Yellen, right?
Yes.
Secretary of Treasury. Well, they're all Jews. Well, wait a second. What happened to, the diversity? I mean, are they white? Because if they are, then the Biden is engaging in white supremacy. I mean, it just struck me as amazing when I got the list, and I thought every one of these people is Jewish. How can that be?
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, the CIA, David S. Cohen, is Jewish, and the two assistant secretaries of state are Jewish, as well as the secretary of state. So intelligence, foreign policy.
Yeah,
I guess because you're just so smart and they're high achievers, right? That's
well for sure. And Janet Yellen, I mean, they brought her back.
Yes, now she was former chairwoman of the Federal Reserve. Yeah,
we don't know any Gentiles that can steal. I mean, what's wrong with this? Why did we bring Janet Yellen back, for heaven's sake? You know, so it was.
The Cuban is actually Jewish too. Alejandro Mayorkas, he's Jewish. He's a Jewish Cuban.
So it's a very, you know, the idea of white supremacy seems a little kind of weak, just looking at this kind of thing. And then I was thinking, well, what are the actual aspects of supremacy? Wouldn't control of the media and control of the federal bank be basically the two most important parts?
Well, you're right. If there was white supremacy, why is it being talked about?
Yeah.
It seems to me that a sign of supremacy is when your supremacy isn't talked about. Oh, wait a second. What does that mean?
Yes. Good point.
You know, the old quote, which is probably not a real quote, but it's true anyway. You know, find out who rules over you, just find out who you can't criticize. You know.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so I really am hoping that the Trump, I don't want to demean them, but the group that showed up there at the Capitol will realize they were used for a photo op for the Biden administration to have a poster mob to, go after whites for insurrection and as an example of white supremacy. That entire thing was just a photo op and psychological.
Well, what's weird is, you know, Trump set him up for that.
Of course.
And then he throws him under the bus and skips town. The warping of that event into something that it completely wasn't. Nancy Pelosi did that rush impeachment. No hearings, no witness, you know, they just send it out. Now it's going sent to the Senate. They're impeaching a former president for inciting an insurrection. There's no evidence of insurrection there's no evidence of incitement, nor is there evidence of an insurrection. There was sort of a
Washington because we had the fake pandemic leading to the fake election.
Yes.
Followed by the fake insurrection.
And that word started being used the next day, and everyone started picking up on it. Then it became a white supremacist event.
Yeah.
Well, because there are a lot of white people there, I suppose. Well, there's a lot of white people in the United States still, two-thirds of the country. So, you know.
Well, this whole concept of white is mind control. I mean, we really should refer to ourselves in hyphenated European ethnicities. I mean,
yeah.
Because that would – when we do that, like I think Scottish German, I guess would be
yeah.
like the way I'd characterize myself. So, I mean, the thing is that would then remind people that the inside this white construction, there are different ethnicities. And that would then, if this was always brought to bear, then people could see things like that the supremacy that is leveled against, for example, Irish people is far-fetched, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Because they really don't have much ownership of the media, don't have a lot of ownership of the central banks, and Biden didn't appoint anyone to his cabinet. So I'm sorry, you struck out. You know, but if we went back to this, if we went back to the, you know, kind of an honest description of the ethnic background, then people could see that, wait, there's too many Jews. There's something wrong here to have this many people with the, you know. Because now it's they can not only hide behind the concept, but then they can attack the concept, even though it's completely absurd, right? So I'm hoping that that we can start that habit of like always bringing up the ethnic background of the Europeans.
Well, the other ones that talk about, racial equity and representation, proportional representation, being a sign of fairness or justice or equity. So if that's the case, how do you account for the disproportionate representation of Jews in the cabinet or, in Hollywood and corporate America? And, if it's good for the goose, then it's good for the gander. But then when it's applied to them, they say, no, you can't do that because, our
That's
Jewish,
anti-Semitism,
that's
yeah.
anti-Semitism. But this is a problem. I mean, this is a problem that's inherent with Jews because of the issue of the diaspora and also of Zionism, because you have a create there is a foreign state, and Jews, particularly Jews that hold these positions, like the CIA or State Department, is that there's a question of dual loyalty or questionable loyalty. I always say dual loyalty would be an improvement. But they themselves talk about their identity as Jews. Sheldon Adelson, who just passed away, said he'd wish he had served in the Israeli Defense Force, not the U.S. Army, and he was devoted to Israel, much more so than to the United States, being a billionaire, a rootless cosmopolitan that he was, and he devoted a lot of resources to that. In fact, he lobbied hard and paid for, the Jonathan Pollard's pardon,
He
and
flew him home.
he flew him home on his jet. Personal jet, got a special waiver to fly him home on his jet, and it turns out the person who recruited him got a pardon from D Donald Trump this in his last in these last last l last minute pardons that he issued. Why? Well, because she was Jewish and he was Jewish, and there's a lot but the question of if you are gonna of part of Zionism, part of the State of Israel, you being loyal to Israel, that does raise question whether or not you should be given a position, whether it be a political or cultural or corporate in the country, because your loyalty is at least have a higher bar. And what they do is they'll talk about, you can't have a religious test, or it's racist to have these things. But they said if you were considering someone who was Chinese or Russian, and they just emigrated, or they're just first generation, it might not be a good idea to give them a high position in U.S. government where they have access to classified information. And just the fact that an organization like AIPAC lobbied hard for Jonathan Powell to get that position, in which he used for espionage and reportedly severely damaged the U.S. security. Well, what does that say about AIPAC and some of these other Jewish organizations? If that doesn't, and then when all of Jewish power lobbies for his pardon in America, what does it say about the Jew American Jews who lobby for his pardon only because he's Jewish? Obviously, his Jewishness matters more than his fact he's an American. So it creates the there's the question. This is a legitimate question regarding, the relation to the, between these group of people and the country. There's a loyalty issue here.
Of course. And I mean, if a Chinese American was part of a religion that believed that China was destined to rule the world and there would be a Chinese Messiah who would come and conquer the United States, I mean, wouldn't this be a question? I mean,
And then
so the
we're
question.
talking about Biden, obviously Trump and his Jewish question, so
Well,
it's
I think that
transcends it,
to me, Biden is fake. I mean, I've seen him with the ash on his forehead. That's almost a sure sign of a converso, as far as I'm concerned. When they do a public Ash Wednesday, like photo op. I mean, Catholics don't do that. That's just done like a politician kissed the baby. But in this instance, it's just to, create a little bit of mind control about his ethnicity.
Well, again, even
I
goes
think
back to
he's a stamp
Pelosi, and
for his own.
Pelosi, another fake Catholic politician who,
Yeah.
her father was a devout, supposedly Italian, Catholic Italian politician, but he was devoted to Zionism. That's because
Yeah, I
he
mean
was
that,
tied
and
into
the
the
thing
mob.
is, yeah, is that that's almost a telltale sign of the converso, in my opinion, because if you are a legitimate Christian, if you have developed your theology out of the New Testament, you are trained in opposition to Zionism. I mean, Jesus predicts the destruction of the temple. He talks about the Jews as, you know, and having all of these flaws, and they're going to, you know, talks about all these catastrophic events that are going to occur to them because of evil. Someone who is developing their theology out of that book would not naturally be a Zionist. They would be in opposition to Zionism. They would say, well, wait a second, let's look at, why were the Jews kicked out? You know, many people think there's a spiritual relationship between the diaspora and the crucifixion. Now, you know, if you've read my book, Caesar Messiah, you know my position on the historicity of all of this. But nevertheless, as it is a cultural phenomena in this moment, you have to look at like Pelosi and Biden and their Zionism. And the same way you have to look at the proto-Zionists in the 1850s and the Freemason lodges in England. You know, if they were legitimate Christians, why would they be so obsessed with the creation of Israel? Mm-hmm. You know, what was the driving force? Because it doesn't come out of their background in the New Testament. That is clear. So there's some other animating energy that is driving them forward. And so when you look at Pelosi and Biden and the zealotry of their Zionism, right, how the zeal, you know, one natural way to explain it is that they're converso, you know, that they are just Christians in appearance, as many adopted, you know, during the Middle Ages, and have they always retained a kind of sense or self-identifying Hebrew, mm-hmm. you know. So I mean, without DNA testing, don't know for sure, but I sure think that it is likely, and it's incredible that this isn't actually brought up as a question. Particularly when they use, you know, this idea of white supremacy as we're going to bulldoze, you know, what remains of kind of European ethnic identity on the grounds of this mythical white supremacy. You have to wonder if this isn't coming from the same intellectual place that produced the authoritarian personality.
Yeah, it's smashing the heritage America, the core ethnic basis of the American society and its republic. And if there is nothing to identify America, you know, ethnically or religiously, then it's just, you know, anyone can be an American. Then it doesn't mean anything to be an American, and you can swamp it, and you could do everything that the globalists want to do, you know, with America and other countries is sort of imposes global homo agenda, where there is no ethnicity, which means there is no identity, ethno-religious identity, which means everyone's just an atomized individual, which are much easier to control and manipulate through psychological warfare. And that's what you get with why the Jews have always taken up the causes like civil rights and so-called justice. They wrap themselves in the flag of justice, when really it's the real agenda is smashing the host culture. Promoting a, you know, sort of a polyglot, diverse situation where there is no host strong ethnic culture that can immediately identify perhaps an alien enemy, but also that no one has any firm basis for nationhood, you know.
Yeah, that, I mean, yeah. Bela Kun, last name, his real name was Cohen, Hungarian Revolution, you know, where they got hold of the children, and they sexual depravity in the morning and fairy tales in the afternoon to disassociate, so that then they could say, look, they wouldn't know up from down. They wouldn't be able to even recognize that they were in a slave camp. Why this is so important is because then, you know, his right hand man, Cohen's right hand man, Gregor Lucas, then starts the Frankfurt School, which then develops the authoritarian personality. It's just a single pulse of intellectual domination and a kind of psychological plan to turn Gentiles into, you know, you can just list it looking at the authoritarian personality. No ethnic pride, no sense of authority. I mean, all of the things which are determined as neurosis would have been, you know, in the 19th century, healthy psychological, you know, sense of well-being for Gentiles. But this was, they were all defined as neurosis, you know, by the authoritarian personality. And now when you get to Biden's cabinet and Rachel Levine, I mean, it's literally, this is 100% success of the project.
Yeah, yeah. And this obviously, this predates the Biden, because Trump had his old anti-Semitism office in the State Department that became an official policy of the United States to root out anti-Semitism around the world. It's been institutionalized. But yeah, any group identity or strategy, you know, for survival and thriving is pathologized, even though they themselves, you know, embrace that strategy. And but if you identify it, you'll call it an anti-Semite, you know. That's why you get things like the 1619 Project, being promoted by the New York Times, which is a Jewish newspaper, Jewish owned. And one other executive order that he signed was ending Trump's 1776 Commission, which was there to promote patriotic, you know, pro-American values in education. And this was supposed to be a part of Trump's late attempt to turn back critical race theory that was being applied in corporations and government offices, and that's being rescinded. And of course, the 1619 Project now, I think who started that, the lady for that.
Yeah, I forget her name.
Hannah Jones, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Nicole Hannah Jones. I think National Scholars, 21 have members of the National Association of Scholars sent a letter saying her Pulitzer Prize should be rescinded because of her fraudulent scholarship. But nonetheless, yeah, this was promoted, and I guess they're trying to reinstitute this stuff. I think it was AOC, who you know, the little gal from New York who gets a lot of press with her crazy bug eyes. And she wants to quadruple funding for these racial sensitivity, anti-white programs, I guess.
This is going to be happening.
Yeah.
You're going to see that Biden will expand this 100 times. I mean, this is, I'm afraid, this is what we're going to be looking at over the next 4 years. You know, like today we were thinking of talking about how what we're seeing is the oligarchy revealing itself. I mean, this can be seen, or it's a way of understanding Biden's emergence as president, because he's so obviously a puppet. I mean, literally at this point, he's a physical puppet. It doesn't have much of a mind. But as the oligarch control over the presidency, Biden is the poster child, right? I mean, it wasn't Trump, even though I think that's in fact the case. But with Biden, it's as if they are sort of past the point where they have to worry about what the public thinks, and they can actually put a literal physical puppet, you know, in the role of president.
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of an interesting question as to what extent they're going to start to move us toward an acceptance of a dictatorship.
Well, it's bizarre. It's like it's an inversion of reality, or this fantasy, apparently, that there's this plague of systemic racism and there's white supremacists and racists everywhere. Biden's defense secretary, Lloyd Austin, apparently his mission will be to rid our ranks of racists and extremists. I thought his mission would be maybe the defense of the country.
Yeah.
From foreign adversaries or threats, but no. Now, of course, as problematic as the term racist is, extremist is even more problematic, because it depends on what's the definition of an extremist. I mean, I would say an administration that appoints a man, Assistant Secretary of Health, who pretends he's a woman, is pretty extreme, if not far out and bizarre. But now I'm extreme if I look askance at that as being, you know, a little weird. And extremist.
Yeah, and of course, extremism is just a, you know, a blind for anti-Semitism,
yes,
as is white supremacy. I mean, they talk about, the 400 years of you know, African Americans have suffered, and then they have this cry for help, which has to be answered with a destruction of European culture, basically.
Yeah.
This is they're trying to make. But really, it's the in back of all this is actually just the fear of the idea of anti-Semitism becoming powerful, because there is just, you know, when you look at the you know, at the lineup of the cabinet, when you just see the power of the media, there's so much direct Jewish control over culture that it's just natural to expect there would be some kind of questioning of it, some kind of criticism of it. And you can see what's going to happen as this comes forward. They're going to try to use this concept to knock it down, you know, to intimidate and to just characterize people who bring these criticisms forward as, you know, having failed the authoritarian personality test.
And there's another issue I was reading today that executive director of the Federal Reserve, I think his name is Stanley Fisher, if I have that correct. Yeah. He's a former head of the Israeli Central Bank.
Yeah.
So how does that happen? Well, I know how it happens, but does that raise questions? But the fluidity of the situation, you can go from, and whose interest is he representing within our central bank? You know, the reality is these central banks are all tied in together, the Bank of International Settlements, and the, you know, the a few select families own these banks, and that's the problem, is the central bank cabal. But I'm thinking, how does that work? I mean, from the standpoint of the general public, that's just accepted? I mean,
it is as if they are, you know, they can basically bring the idea of a Jewish theme oligarchy ruling the country into the public at this point. It's as if, well, who's going to say boo? We have the levers of intimidation everywhere, and so we can just, you know, come forward.
And if you point this out, you're an anti-Semite.
Right.
If you have problems with that relationship.
And I think you're going to find that they'll wrap COVID and vaccine resistance into the anti-Semitism.
I believe I've already started doing that, yes.
Yeah.
Because it's the same type of person, the personality type. It will be at the profile. You know, you'll have domestic terrorist profiles working for Department of Homeland Security and the fusion centers, and this will be the profile of someone who is doesn't want to get jabbed with a experimental, you know, toxic vaccine, so-called, or someone who questions the various bailouts, or someone who questions the mask mandates, or the continued lockdowns, and who's benefiting from. And if you point out that maybe groups of a certain ethnic group are benefiting disproportionately, well, then you become an anti-Semite. You can't question it.
Right. Well, if they have all of the power and you criticize the way that, you know, we're being forced into kind of a dictatorship, then it's anti-Semitism by definition. I mean, it would be nice if it wasn't anti-Semitism, if they would share more of the power, then there would be some other group we could hate. But the problem is that right now it's just Rachel Levine and, you know, David Cohen and the puppet Biden. And so these, you know, this meme is alive. To digress, what do you make of all of the people dropping dead after taking the vaccine? I mean, this afternoon, I think Hank Aaron.
Someone said right after taking the vaccine and promoting
really
it.
Strange, because he had taken the vaccine publicly, and I guess unlike the you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger and all of the other celebrities, he actually had the vaccine. It was filmed. And then he drops dead. And there have been so many people who've had it. Trying to get the statistics right, it's not clear, very fluid, but it looks like close to 3% are having such powerful negative reactions that they're ill for a period of time. And the resistance to it is really growing. You know, here in California, or at least in the area near where I live, the vaccine is piling up. They can't get people to actually take it. So it's a very interesting situation. I'm hoping it will, you know, become more ferocious as the resistance to it grows. And they, what I'm hoping is that they will ham-handed the, you know, the rollout of the thing and demand that people take it. And this will ignite more serious rebellion, you know, more ferocious rebellion, because you have to get into that psychological state to be clear-minded about all the other stuff we've been talking about tonight.
Well, the fact that they labeled, you know, some 70 million Americans domestic terrorists or extremists or white supremacists or insurrectionists or whatever means, okay, so now they consider you a dissident. Once they do that, the social contract is torn up, and I no longer have to be a member of the loyal opposition, and I don't recognize you as legitimate. So you can build upon that, coupled with this whole vaccine thing, to promote consciousness in the public that that complying and giving legitimacy to this illegitimate state no longer is a valid survival strategy.
Yeah, you know, it's. I mean, I'm sure they have all kinds of psychological profiles, and you know, that they've run. But just to me, and you know, some of the people I am in communication with, the vaccine would be the line in the sand.
Mm-hmm.
They just wouldn't accept it. I won't accept it. And if it is mandatory, then that's just where the fight begins. You know, it's that simple. It's just unacceptable. My DNA is, you know, my possession. You can't mess with it. And I don't even buy the, you know, the narrative concerning your fake virus. So I'm not going to take it. Well, we'll just see. It would be great if, in fact, there was, you know, 20, 30 million really clear-minded Americans that fought back. I think that would be, you know, a number that couldn't be controlled. And you know, it's like we talked last week, we bringing up the concept that you had alluded to, you know, months ago about you don't need to have 90% of the people realize that the, you know, the fact is false when it is patently false. You just need one brave person. In any group, you just need one person to point out the reality. And once that happens, then you start losing the intimidation. The other people will also say, well, yeah, 2 and 2 is 4. So the question is where, you know, in terms of our population is the percentage that creates herd immunity to propaganda? Mm-hmm. And then last week I suggested maybe 15%. Well, I think that's very achievable over the next couple of years as they bludgeon us with this, the charge of white supremacy. And with this anti-vax being a neurosis meme that they're trying to shove down our throats, these are points that could really flare up. Let's hope.
Yeah, there was a I think it might have been Cori Bush, that one of the dimmer bulbs on Capitol Hill. I think it was her, but she was accusing the protesters on January 6th of being white supremacists, and a few of the Republican members have represented booed her. And she seemed actually shocked that she got booed. Thinking, well, what do you think is going to happen when you start insulting people?
You know? So irrational.
I mean, it's like, what do you expect? It was like, yeah. You know, like you can't. You know, she's so used to being able to say these things, and you know, bark out accusations and yell and act up like that without any opposition. And I think there people when we get a, are going to be surprised in the ensuing months or maybe years when white people, white Americans start actually, you know, responding. You know, right now race relations consist of basically how do black people feel about white people and how do white people feel about how black people feel. Yeah. that's going to change because, you know, people have a natural, you know, there's only so much they can take of this. Especially when they've lost their jobs or businesses, they've been told, you know, they're just not going to take it. You know.
Yeah, I mean, the charge of white supremacy and racial privilege doesn't really work very well when you don't have a job, when you have to wear a mask, when you're told you can't go to church. I mean, when these things are being forced upon you by basically an alien government, you don't really have a whole lot of, you don't have a sense of privilege or supremacy, do you?
No, I'm trying to find the White Supremacist Club to invoke it a little bit in my behalf.
Yeah, of course. I mean, we should insist upon it. we should say, wait a second, we're the majority in this country. We really want, you know, some supremacy in ownership of the media, some supremacy in ownership of the Federal Reserve Bank. We really would like to get our hands on that one. And in terms of all these cabinet, I mean, where are the actual legitimate, you know, Gentile people? We don't see many of them. So we know we're sick of that. We want some white supremacy there, too. I mean, you know, at a certain point, the charges, you know, anti-Semitism, white supremacy, they only work among the brain controlled. You know what I mean? They have almost no effect at all on the population that they're trying to hurt with these charges, because the reality is just too far from the charge. You see, it's just what is real is so vivid and so painful that the idea that, well, you know, I'm complaining because I'm anti-Semite or because I'm anti-Black, I mean, these things are preposterous. And plus, the independent media is slowly getting in to people's minds that, you know, there are malevolent reasons why this stuff is being brought in front of you.
So people
are starting to get more skeptical.
So it's like they're not doing this to bring in racial harmony or to pursue justice. They're there to dispossess you, deterritorialize you, replace you. That's and that's, I mean, if you think that, you know, if you're getting a little impatient with the treatment you're getting now, if you're a white guy, white person, and you're 65% of the population, wait till you're 35% of the population. You know, you don't want to wait to that point. But we, nevertheless, we've had this installation of Joe Biden as president, the pretender, the great pretender. And some people say it sort of marks the end of the old civic nationalist America, the idea, and sort of the coming out of this managerial state, that's sort of the consummation of oligarchy. We can look at competitive elections and the idea of open debate as sort of something of a bygone era, and it's been swept away in favor of sort of ceremonial elections and all types of restrictions on free speech. Because it appears like this oligarchy, or it's at least it's a managerial, you know, class or servants have seized control of the country. I mean, obviously, we have the election, and then some of the appeal of Biden was that if you elect me, there'll be some more calm. The sort of the raucousness of the Trump era would end. And now I'd say,
riots.
No riots, so we get some normalcy back. We're not getting that. The Joe Biden has taken the oath of office. Of course, he took the oath of office. You know, he was surrounded by fence, you know, with barbed wire. Thousands of guards, I think more than two army divisions were there. You know, D.C. looked like it was under occupation. Like I said, it looked like some sort of North Korean coronation of the new dictator. It's clear now to most Americans, this has been, I think, the truth for the longest time, that the political system in the United States is now, it's sealed. It's not open. It's only for insiders. And so that's what we got. I mean, we have you can no longer have any hope of your guy winning a federal election. He'll have to be sort of vetted and chosen by the managerial class. It's the sort of controlled by the managerial elite. The political marketplace is another thing to shut down. We no longer really have a market economy anymore. I mean, it's Main Street's been shut down because of COVID. We've had this huge explosion, at least increase in the wealth of a few billionaires. I think 28 billionaires were created last year in the United States because of the lockdown effects and the transfer of wealth that it created. Small businesses have been shut down. That was a big source of, you know, I guess you could say conservative or Republican politics, not the rhino politics. And so it's become increasingly clear that we have this new regime. Big economic players like the big banks, the tech giants, are no longer really subjected to market discipline or competition in any meaningful way, of course. I mean, obviously, if you decide to go somewhere else, what are you going to do? I'm not going to go to Amazon, but then again, you go to some other company which relies on Amazon. Same thing with the tech companies. I'm not going to rely on Facebook. I'll go to Parler. Oh, Amazon shuts Parler down. So One thing we can say about the Trump era is that it did reveal to most Americans the true nature of the system. The country, as we once knew it, or once we thought we knew it, is gone. Economically, politically, demographically, culturally, it's been being changed, not by the people, but by the, I guess, the cultural mandarins, the economic, oligarchs who control, I guess, communications through entertainment and also through social media and these things. And maybe this is why the new regime is now willing to sort of come out in the open, destroy these institutions that presented a facade of democracy, representative government, and openness. I'm obviously at this point public distrust of the media perhaps is no longer important. The new class, obviously because of voter fraud, is no longer really subjected to the voters. Media companies no longer worry about maintaining audiences. Where you're going to go, right? So now that's where we are. We're a dissidence in a we're in a captive nation, and there's an alien government. And as we said last week, this is a moment of clarity. So.
Indeed, and yeah, well said. And I hope that the QAnon people also, a great majority will make the transition to clarity because we need that. We are in a very bad situation, very grim. But we need everyone engaged to fight our way out of this, to organize, to go through with the information revolution, to create an enormous, undigestible cadre of people who are not willing to accept living in a technological slave state and having their body reduced to that of a delta or epsilon in terms of, their intellectual capacity. People who resist that, need to organize. The QAnon thing, I mean, you sent me that article suggesting that there were government ties to its origin. The FBI, evidently, and this reminded me of something. Actually, it was an article was sent to me that in the when the Soviet Union came into existence, there was an organization that was the premier resistance to the Bolsheviks. It was called Operation Trust, and it turned out it was actually being run by the Bolsheviks. But it took years for this to manifest the reality of it. And you can understand how easy it was then for the secret police to identify anti-Bolsheviks and, round them up, send them to the gulags. So this is QAnon. I mean, I think you have to look at it in this light, that this was done, not just as a cul-de-sac to keep people from doing anything meaningful, but also as a way just to identify those, who are interested in this, in the idea that there is malevolence inside the government. We need all of those people to switch gears quickly. They have to get out of the Q fantasy. And these are some of the individuals who have the best technical energy, right? They know the internet well. They know how to communicate. This group really needs to get out of the Q fantasy. It should be clear to everyone except, those who are intellectual addicts to this idea that it was fake and that we need to have a different way of looking at the government, that it is not good guys and bad guys. The whole thing is a malevolent. The whole thing is a cesspool. We need to take that approach so that we can organize ourselves against the government, not try to get involved in these fantasies about which general is working with Trump to, expose the pedophiles. I mean, what we need is to have the energy of QAnon put into the organizing the public against the, as you say, now the oligarchy, which is just manifest. It's straightforward. We can see it.
There is an article by Angelo Codevilla at American Greatness that talked about this. And he said, in 2021, the laws, customs, and habits of the heart that had defined the American Republic since the 18th century are things of the past. Americans' movements and interactions are under a stricture for which no one ever voted. Government disarticulated society by penalizing ordinary social intercourse and precluding the rise of spontaneous opinion therefrom. Together with corporate America, it smothers minds through mass and social media with relentless, pervasive, identical, and ever-evolving directives. In that way, these oligarchs have proclaimed themselves the arbiters of truth, entitled and obliged to censor whoever disagrees with them as systematically racist adepts of conspiracy theories. Corporations and the government itself require employees to attend meetings personally to acknowledge their guilt. They solicit mutual accusations while violent felons are released from prison. Anyone may be fired or otherwise have his life wrecked for questioning government corporate sentiment. Today's rulers don't try to convince. They demand obedience and they punish. The difference is what we're seeing here is now, as long as strictly governments, there's sort of a government-private partnership. It's corporate at this point. And the old rules, at least the old categories that we thought government versus corporate, private enterprise versus government, capitalism versus socialism, right versus left, doesn't really apply anymore. You know, it doesn't attain to the reality, to the political reality. And I read that excerpt from that article last week talking about, you know, this was illustrated on Capitol Hill during the so-called, you know, insurrection, the Capitol Hill kerfuffle, you know, that was more or less set up, if not staged in parts. I think part of it was real, part of it was set up for the optics. That's why there are photographers there, you know. And someone said, no one sits in Nancy Pelosi's chair unless she wants them there, to, you know. But
of course, the whole thing was a photo op.
Yeah. But he was saying the reaction by both sides of the aisle, horror at this event. No, there was no sober, honest reaction. It was all like, you know, because they all represent the same interests, you know, right and left. And what we need to focus, what unifies the Republicans and Democrats as opposed to what differentiates them. So that's what we're facing. This is the essence of oligarchy. And the whole point of being in power is to do this very thing. This is the exercise of pure power. The whole point of being an oligarch is to make people submit to circumstances or conditions that they don't like. And so when people are shocked by this, well, no, this is their mindset. This is their culture. This is how they want to rule over you. And they're not going to be embarrassed or shamed by accusations of hypocrisy or proof of hypocrisy or inconsistency. They have no fixed principles other than power, you know, and greed. And so you can't really embarrass those type of people, nor the people that serve them. That's why you're saying this open hypocrisy, you know, this laughable almost hypocrisy part of the media and other politicians about what happened on Capitol Hill and how many of them encouraged and cheered on the riots of the summer and calling them peaceful protest and, you know, the misrepresenting that. It's all about narrative control. And so that's what people have to, you know, come to acknowledge about this.
Yeah. And I hope that the people who were brought to D.C., particularly by Trump, for what is now obviously a photo op to use in the forthcoming elimination program for white supremacy. I hope that all the people who came to D.C., who are, you know, honest, clear-minded Americans who thought they were there to demonstrate against an obviously fraudulent election, that they take the energy that brought them there and use it to communicate among themselves. They don't have to worry any longer about supporting Trump. Mm-hmm. This turned out to be a dead end. Now what they have to worry about is being exterminated. And so to avoid this, they need to try to organize in the same way that they organized that march. They need to organize themselves economically and politically and spiritually to defend one another. This is really our task right now. Our task is the idea of a you know, it's like the people in Germany, in Berlin, having the protests, that hoping that Merkel would become reasonable and back away from the COVID restrictions. I mean, this is a tragic and absurd waste of time. protest to this government is a waste of time. Even interacting and with the fraudulent election system is a waste of time. We have to have an honest appraisal of what is possible. I think that electing righteous sheriffs is something that we can do. And perhaps even some in small towns, righteous mayors. You can create some political defense locally. This has to be the goal. Forget about the cesspool of the national politic. And of course, the idea of trying to make CNN or Fox News become respondent to the needs of the public. I mean, again, these things are tools of the oligarchs, right? This is what they are. So we need to stop interacting with them and develop our own media, even if it means just going back to letters exchange and soapboxes, because we have the internet. We should use it while it's up, and we really need to just do that kind of local organizing. I mean, to me, the thing that is most important, because it's the most thing, something that you can actually achieve, is to elect a good sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
Elect a good sheriff. If you have a good sheriff, you have at least something in play that you can defend yourself with. So elect a sheriff that is of you, he's of the people, and he has the courage to defend them. That's the first thing.
And again, what we have here is there's an attempt to consolidate now. We're seeing that with the tech companies, with Google and Facebook and Twitter. And of course, you have the FBI going after insurrectionists, and you have this sort of corporate campaign against so-called dissidents, which is like they're openly saying that the banks and corporate, other financial services will not do business with even with sitting senators who supposedly partook in the insurrection, meaning they challenged the vote. And this whole idea of basically if you challenge the results of the Electoral College or the election itself and the circumstances of that election, our COVID-19 election, with all the voting fraud, somehow you are no longer allowed to participate in the political process or even in commercial activities. And it's really bizarre. The example of Curt Schilling's insurance policy being canceled because he supported Donald Trump. Like, what? the problem. And here's the thing is again, with these corporations, I'm reading a book called The Clowning of America. And the author makes a point about these multinational corporations is they're political organizations. They're not just there trying to, build and sell a better mousetrap. Is they're involved in reverse metapolitics, where they themselves are engaged in social engineering to change the politics. They're changing the culture through their advertising campaigns, the products they provide, the censoring they impose, the human resource hiring policies that they impose on their employees. But even the products that they throw out is there to change the culture, to not just to ensure markets, but to change people's attitudes. And so, again, these aren't just a simple, the libertarian sort of tactical libertarian nihilist approach to these companies, to these entities, just simply doesn't work because they themselves are political bodies. They're attached to these elite interests that have malevolent designs on humanity. So the whole idea of it's a private company, you can't control it. Well, no, that's not the applicable anymore. It's not enough. And also, they themselves are corporations that have charters that have enjoy all types of privileges and protections from the federal government, particularly at their close attachment to the financial system, which is a privileged monopoly, brought about by the power of the state, so they can control the state. And so these old categories don't apply anymore. We don't really, like I said earlier, we don't have a free market anymore.
I'm not sure we ever really had one in the broad sense, but we can now see clearly that Amazon, Facebook, Google, the central banks, I mean, these are all part of the oligarchic control, the slave state. That's what they are. So to the extent that we can replace our interaction with these things with our own banking system, with our own economic system, with our own food production system, with our own sheriff. To the extent we can, we should always do it.
Yeah, but I mean, when Amazon becomes dominant, or when Jeff Bezos' wealth increases by a third, you know, he makes, I don't know, $28 billion or something because of a lockdown that the state imposed, then he, in the same time, buys up a newspaper which spews out propaganda that helps maintain the lockdown. I mean, there's a governance issue here.
Yeah. Well, it's what you call an oligarchy.
Yeah. I mean,
it's just a slave state. It's not really particularly even.
Well, those have money, yeah, have more power and control, can control people's idea of reality through propaganda.
But you know, there is a little bit of a pushback, and you can kind of see it here. I mean, just, you know, the sample size around me, people are trying to avoid using Amazon. They can see that it's, mm-hmm, a slave state. I mean, they may not be able to express it. They can't articulate, but they're just leery of something that's so omnipresent. And they're also starting to see that, you know, the Costco Walmart phenomena is a way of destroying the small businesses. Mm-hmm. You know, they are reveling economically in the lockdown. I mean, Costco has a line outside the block because it's the only place you can get a lot of goods now here,
yep,
where I live. All of the former small stores, they were hit in a number of ways. I mean, and many of them were just locked down. I mean, the restaurants. But even the small stores that were essential lost business because they didn't have the whole synergy of the restaurant activity around them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the large stores picked up all of this. And of course, without income, people are just forced into the big box because it's cheaper. You know, so they go there with their government checks and you know, they're already in the slave state. You know, what can I say?
The government dangles a contact tracing job after you've been thrown out.
Yeah, right. Or maybe like giving out vaccinations.
It's the same way they guarantee recruitment of the armed forces so you can be cannon fodder for empire by hollowing out the interior economy so people have.
Yeah, well, you know, the vax is so unpopular that they're trying to bribe people. I think that they're going to try to make the $3,000 check.
Yeah.
Contingent upon taking the jab.
Yeah. So you try with that, but you're right. I mean, they have kind of exposed themselves here because one thing is the system does now. Maybe they don't care about this much more. But you need at least the appearance of an opposition party to maintain legitimacy in the eyes of the public. So if they go after, and maybe this sort of witch hunt mentality will burn off in a few weeks because it won't be practical, and you have the crazies like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and some of the, you know, other idiots, simmer down a little bit. But they have to maintain the idea of an opposition, and they're destroying that. And they're going to radicalize, in their own terms, I would say, wake up tens of millions of Americans, and that they run the risk of that. They won an election, but in the process, they've exposed themselves of being just ruthlessly corrupt. I mean, they really used like third world tactics in this election, and they just simply didn't care. And then the whole system just kind of ignored it. The judicial branch, even the Republican Party did it because the establishment wanted it for whatever reason. Whatever little resistance that Trump offered, or I think just the symbolism of Trump and the idea of populism had to be destroyed. But nevertheless, as you mentioned, there's a lot of power. I mean, power is still very diffused in the United States because, the Republicans still control of, you know, I think 30 of 50 legislatures. They're still at the federal level. They seem to be on the outs. They seem to have wanted that just to get rid of Trump. And as you mentioned, there's the local sheriffs. A lot of them simply aren't enforcing it. Elect local sheriffs. You can get involved in local elections. The down ballot candidates, which have revealed themselves to be very important politically in this country, because they're the ones that were key in sowing chaos over the summer and not enforcing the laws, exposing, Soros-elected district attorneys, to the public, to the voting public, making that an issue. Is that these people represent this oligarch, and and the media themselves. I mean, if you watch it now, it really is a joke. It's gotten worse. It's noticeably in the past 5 years, has gotten so like obviously partisan and amateurish in its bias. Whereas in the past, it did a better job of at least keeping up appearances about being objective. And now it's like you watch straight news shows, like whether it's CNN and Jake Tapper or something. This things they say, it's almost like you're watching one of these political barking shows where people debate. But I think they don't even have debate anymore. Even these shows have become echo chambers now. And so the effect of the media is going to be, well, I would say they've already exposed themselves to being just shills, and now it's just they're just speaking to the choir. I don't know how persuasive they are to the general public. And so now there's an opportunity because there's they've exposed themselves. They're out there as oligarchs, or fake opposition or corrupt, and that's an opportunity again to I guess to awaken a lot of people to at least to the reality of the situation and deny their consent, deny the legitimacy to the system,
Yeah,
so.
when we had Walter Cronkite, no one could see the propaganda.
No,
We couldn't
that's the way it
understand that we
is, right?
manipulate. We just, we thought it was legit, but that isn't the case now. And there are structures in humanity and Homo sapiens that make us very difficult to control forever with propaganda, because once you lose the trust, once you say, I don't really trust this anymore, propaganda is very hard to get to be effective any longer. And so, with so many people now feeling that the media is a part of the oligarchy, I just think that the effectiveness of the propaganda is going to erode. And I also think that once someone goes out of the shadow into the light, just to use an analogy. Once they come into the idea that, well, I'm being propagandized, there's an oligarchy, I'm being lied to, and everywhere I can't trust it. You can't go back in the bottle. It's impossible to take someone like that and then just browbeat them into accepting, Biden's camp, I mean, his inauguration speech as a legitimate, political concept. You just can't. It's impossible. Once they make the transition, they're there forever. And so, believe me, it isn't the case that hope is lost. It's the case that we finally have hope. The era when we were the most damaged and destroyed would have been the 50s and 60s, because no one understood what was happening to us. We
Yeah,
didn't have.
that occurred during the good old days, right?
Yeah. But now there is. Now
Yeah.
there's always opposition. There's always people, questioning and things like that. So we finally have a chance. Before we were basically being slaughtered without even being able to resist, but now we can resist.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of opportunities at state and local governments where you can put up opposition to this. A lot of states are now declaring themselves Second Amendment sanctuaries, which are good. As a sort of a resistance to massive resistance to the federal push. I've mentioned the sheriffs, of course, not enforcing lockdowns. That's happening all over the place. You have, I think, yeah, it was in Virginia where counties refused to enforce the state law. There were some gun control laws that were passed, and there are constitutional sheriffs who just simply refused to enforce some of the regulations.
Well, in Italy, there's 50,000 restaurants that have just said to hell with it.
Yeah, they said we're not going to shut down, and
They've
that
just
many you
opened
can't
up,
enforce it.
and it's there's different levels, I guess, of how effective this is, but there is a sincere rebellion there.
It's funny that wasn't reported in the United States.
And hopefully it can be. We're obviously more, in many ways, more cowardly, but we can change, and we can, improve our political system and our
Well,
understanding with time.
just like I was reading an article today or the other day about abortion, and of course we have Joe Biden, our Catholic president, who's pro-abortion, and he's going to be signing these executive orders. But this, how just you know, that's discouraging to the pro-life movement. But really, where there's really been gains made in the pro-life movement have been at the state and local level. And so, yeah, they, you know, you cannot overturn Roe v. Wade. So what? But if the passage of certain laws and regulations and activism at the state level causes the closure of abortion clinics in that state, you've achieved your objective because there's less abortions. It isn't, you don't get the laurels of a political victory, but you achieve your objective of reducing the level of amount of abortions and saving lives. And that's occurring at the state level. And
Well,
so
yeah, I
that's where you have
always
to
thought that
focus.
Roe was just a, even though it was just a political prop, it really had no statistical meaning. I mean, the states that would have been able to get rid of Roe, they were already doing almost no abortions,
Yeah, there
and
was. It's been described
in
to me as.
gigantic. And then, like in California, where abortion is a 60-40 winner, this is where they're all taking place.
Yeah, it was
So
described to me as Roe v.
Roe
Wade
would,
was
yeah, changing Roe wouldn't have really had a statistical effect on the amount of abortions. I think it was just used for mind control for both. It's one of those issues that creates the illusion that the democracy that we're being given is meaningful. But
Yeah.
this is a, it was so emotional. It really got people on both sides to think that it was just critical to elect this person or that person. The oligarchs are what we have to focus on, not the issues that they give us, for the, in the gladiatorial pit
Yeah.
that they've created.
And that's, you know, sort of what Americans were, those hundreds of thousands of Americans that converged in Washington, D.C. on January 6th were set up for that. You know, because, you know, let's, you know, if Donald Trump believed his rhetoric about the elections, there should have been some prosecutions and real investigations spearheaded immediately after the election. And if the senators and congressmen really believed what they said, they would have demanded that the debate proceeded, not just folded like that, you know.
Yeah, it was all just a big photo op and psyop so that they would have justification for attacking white supremacy, as the Biden administration, rolls forward. It was all, and Trump was involved in every bit of it. He's a lifetime actor. He's a complete fake. He was set up as the archetypical white male so that now he can be, given to the public as a, as a re as a, as an example of why we have to destroy this evil genre, the white male,
Yeah, so almost like a 3-minute hate against Donald Trump. And it's weird because as late as December 30th, he was the most admired American.
how times
And just, but it shows how the media switches the narrative. And all of a sudden, he's among the media, he's a reviled president. But I don't think, regardless of what Donald Trump is, that's not how most people feel. But they're told to feel that way by the media because they set up this narrative of what occurred, this
I
false
love the quote
accusation. It's something.
I love the quote you gave, I think it was last week when you said that Donald Trump is the president who is most hated for what he didn't do and most loved for what he didn't do.
Yeah.
I
Donald
mean,
Jeffrey said that. Yeah, that
brilliant. Yeah, because that's so true. I mean, both sides, as the propaganda got to them, saw him as something that he wasn't.
Yeah. It's because it's the narrative that the media and you know, it's all part of the political theater that we're subjected to. There was, you know, the so yeah. I mean, that's what we that's what the political show is about. And part of that is allow the oligarchs to continue their plunder, consolidate their power, and amass their wealth. You know.
Yeah, well, and to enslave us with this stupid medical tyranny that they have going with this COVID business. Just because this has come up in situations that I've been facing over the last like week, I just gonna mention that, always be aware of the clear and easy to explain malevolent acts that they took to get the COVID hallucination taken seriously. They changed the definition of what constituted a death, March 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
They use a PCR, an examination that is absolutely impossible to determine a virus with. You know, when you run the PCR at 40 cycles, and always demand any politician tell you how many cycles the test is running, because they won't know, and this will expose them as just a victim of the propaganda. And then, you know, mention that the deaths that they're talking about are not necessarily from COVID. They put the flu, they put pneumonia. There are, if you die of an overdose or of a suicide, I mean, they don't disaggregate the causes now. And so they have this lump of mortality, which is, you can see it like in Los Angeles, where we have this huge spike in deaths. But if you can get back far enough in longitudinal data, you can see that really this isn't that unusual of a flu season. It's just that now we're in a situation where they are defining flu and pneumonia as COVID. And the point is, what I'm trying to say is that this is all evidence of malevolence. All of those things, the government is not so stupid as to not realize that a PCR set at 40 cycles is meaningless, right? They know the person is not infected. This shows malevolence. This is done for the purpose of mind control. Should be really easy for people who are aware of these things to take that information into arguments, into public places, and say, look, you're being manipulated. This isn't real. It's not real. This is what you can see how obvious the manipulation is. And so, you know, this is part of the reason I bring it up, because I think it's important to have that as a context when you go into trying to get, say, enthusiasm for a locally focused sheriff, someone who really is from your group, your town, your organization, someone that can represent you. This is the kind of thing you can use to get more people to realize we've got to start acting locally. Use an expression, Tim. We've got to act locally so that we can have some defense for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Of course, there's Joe Biden. I think he mentioned in his address a moment of silence for the 400,000 people who died of COVID.
Of course. Of course. I mean, in the debates, he and Trump had like a moment of silence, or almost sort of burst into crying because of all of the people who weren't there at the dinner table.
Yes.
You know, I mean, this is just ludicrous. This is like a bad Saturday Night Live skit or something. People just cannot take this crap seriously, for heaven's sakes. They've got to understand how to expose it when they have a chance to be in front of the public. You know, and I mean by public, I just mean, you know, your friends and people you're trying to get involved in resisting this, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's where we are as of this
date. That's where we are, Tim. And I think finally we're actually turning the corner. I'm going to be very optimistic. I think that the mind control and the oligarchy are too visible and too stupid to be taken very seriously much longer. And so the question is how can we fight back effectively? You know, got to get more people involved. I think that could happen, because the way they've set things up, we're going to have real motivation here pretty quick, as, you know, without jobs, you know, without a real economy, with an exposed oligarchy running the thing. I mean, people are going to get angry here real fast.
Yeah, the people aren't going to take kind of being accused of being a white supremacist neo-Nazi when you're simply protesting because the government's not allowing you to work and you're facing eviction. And, you know.
Yeah, when you're poor and hungry, it's a little tough to take the charge of white supremacy seriously, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. So we'll see how it goes. So, okay, Joe, that's good.
All right, Tim. Well, thanks for the discussion. We'll get him next week. Now, you know. Just let's hope that Rachel Levine has a great week and helps American school kids move on to health.
Yes, that's true. Dispense advice about how to handle their transition.
Indeed.
So, okay, take it easy.
Right,
bye bye.
Talk to you soon. Bye bye.